Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Pro Advocate Radio, brought to you by My Advocate Center.
Welcome to Pro Advocate Radio with your host, James O'Brien, and the founder of My Advocate Center, Deb Beecham. And today we have our special guest, Wendy Hayes, and you are a certified divorce financial planner.
That is correct.
So tell us a little bit about what exactly that is as opposed to just a regular financial planner.
Well, I focus mostly on people that are going through a divorce, and it's my role to help them come up with an equitable and fair settlement. And not only do I help them come up with a settlement that they will walk away with, but I also give them a snapshot as to what that's going to look like 20 years into the future. So they walk away from their divorce with full transparency of what both spouses will receive and what their financial futures will look like.
Well, and before we get too far into that, Deb, I was thinking, Wendy, if you will walk us through basically a thumbnail sketch of what your financial planning should look like pre-divorce. What are the things that we should be putting into place? We're not looking to get divorced. We want to make sure we're planning for the future. And then we can kind of talk about how that might change as you go into a divorce. So to set down that firm foundation financially for myself, my spouse, my kids, what do I need to be doing?
Well, for me, I look at the short term, the midterm, and the long term. So it is critically important that you are living within your financial means, and we find always that people do not do that. And as far as that is concerned, if you're living within your means, you're planning for your short term. You're also planning for the midterm by putting money away into what I call short term savings for vacations and holidays and things of that nature. In addition to that, long term financial planning would include your retirement and longer range goals, buying a home or buying a new car, things of that.
So if you're planning, maybe you have a better chance of setting expectations that are reasonable, which, you know, from my perspective, I'm looking at how do we prevent conflict from escalating? We're always going to have disagreements, but if we can keep things from getting out of control and creating bitterness and fear and resentment, I think that's one of the big driving factors of family conflict that escalates into divorce and litigation, is that people just aren't communicating, they're not setting reasonable expectations, they're not seeking out the right kind of advice, and in some cases there's no transparency. Sometimes people have spending problems they don't want the other spouse to know about. Then healthcare issues come into play. Children with special needs, that's a huge area, and I know not only in Georgia but nationwide, there's a lot of families who find that their kids develop learning disabilities or like autism, Asperger's, things along those lines come into play that the family wasn't planning on. And they really need to take a step back and work with someone like yourself, of just a solid, get a solid foundation for how we're going to navigate these changes that we're going through. And that might help us stay a little calmer as we're working through those challenges. So is that something that you're brought into occasionally, is, you know, the family's still together, but we've got problems that we don't know how to resolve on our own?
Typically what I advise people to do, and it works very well in my marriage, is that we have joint accounts. So we have a joint checking account and we have a joint savings account. And to your point, we agree on what our goals are for that, those short-term needs. And those are to pay our everyday expenses and whatnot. Then we each have whatever, after we've paid all of the joint bills, we divide up what's left. So he gets his half and I get my half. And we decide accordingly what we're going to do with our own money. That takes away some of the disagreements. If it's my money at that point, then I can do with it what I want.
Oh, you know, so you can let go a little bit of the control.
Right.
You know, give each other some breathing room, maybe some mad money.
Exactly. So when my husband goes out and buys a new tool, I think that's crazy, but, you know, more power to him.
Well, and I think that does become a point of contention a lot of times in marriages is people don't feel like they have any spending money of their own. They're working and it's just all going into the big pot. They never, you know, it feels good to be able to go out and just spend it on something you want for a change.
Right, right. And without having to ask for permission. And I think that when you do the separate accounts as well as the joint accounts, it gives you the right, or it makes it feel like you have the right to go spend that money the way that you would like to. So that's one thing that I advise people to do. My father was a very wise man, and he used to tell us all the time that you can budget for the big things, but it's the little things that will nickel and dime you to death. And so there are different ways that you can manage that. Again, one of the things that I do is I try and always leave a cushion in our checking account to cover an unforeseen emergency. You have to have some kind of short-term savings that will cover you, because that's part of life. Everybody has a car repair or needs new tires or, you know, an unforeseen medical expense or a home repair or whatnot.
And we just don't like to think about those things, do
right.
we?
No, we don't. But they are an everyday part of life.
Yeah, there's, you know, a phrase about the moving at the speed of light. Well, we're moving at the speed of life. And when you have kids coming at you, mm-hmm. you know, with, I need that prom dress, not this prom dress, I need that prom dress.
Right.
I need those tires on my car. And I want that phone and the ability to use all this social media. And they don't think about all the ancillary costs that come along with that. So, and, you know, this show is an advocacy show. We really want people thinking in terms of how can I be my own best advocate within my family while resolving a conflict? And if we can think in terms of preventing conflict from worsening, and how if we get into a debate, disagreement, and it escalates into conflict, what do we need to know about conflict and how do we dial it down so that we can actually resolve issues and move on peacefully? And from what I'm seeing and hearing, and this is over the last 7 years and going back into my own, you know, marriage and divorce, that the financial issues, if we had really had open discussions and we'd had the right support, looking at, like you say, about the short term, the midterm, and the long term, what is this going to look like 20 years out? You know, how do we plan for all these things around the kids' needs? We didn't know when we divorced that my son was going to need some extra support around school. We didn't know that my daughter was going to develop asthma. You know, asthma appointments take a lot of time away from work and school. And, you know, those are things that we need to have realistic, calm discussions about. So I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm glad that we're leading off with the financial arena, because I think we can serve a lot of people well by laying the groundwork the right way financially.
I would like to throw in something very personal and near and dear to my heart. I have a son that also has a learning disability. He has what's called an auditory processing disorder. And so he did have to have private schooling and has graduated from high school, and he is gainfully employed, living on his own, and what I consider a true success story.
Great.
But some of the things that you mentioned along the way became what I call teachable moments. So he wanted a specific pair of tennis shoes. Well, I'm willing to give you X number of dollars to buy those shoes. If you want a more expensive pair, then you're going to have to figure out a way to come up with the rest of that money. That way I've, in my mind, fulfilled my parental obligation. But if he has other desires, then he can figure out how to pay for those himself.
That's great. Let's remember that teachable moment concept.
Yes.
I think we're going to come back to that a lot. So
one of the other things that I did with him a lot was to sit him down when he got into his later years in high school and help him figure out what a realistic budget was going to look like. So I think that, again, that's something that's very critical, that people don't always understand how much does it really take to run a household. And kids today, more so than ever before, feel like they should be able to walk out of their parents' home and have exactly what their parents parents at or better, right?
It doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it does not. It takes some time to get to that point.
Yeah, maybe we should, as parents, when we don't know this at the time, but when we're back in college and graduating high school and starting our careers, maybe we should have some picture albums of what our apartments look like just for that reality check for our kids, because you're right, they all expect it to just fall into place.
That's right.
Unfortunately, it doesn't quite work that way. One of the things that I wanted to touch on was when we talk about pre-planning and savings and investments, is there a general rule of thumb that we need to be using percentage-wise of what I need to be putting back as far as into investments, into savings, number of months that I need to be able to carry the family if something catastrophic happens, some things along those lines?
The general rule of thumb for the catastrophic event is 6 months of whatever your total family bills are going to be able to cover that in the event of an emergency. As far as the long-term planning, people are different in what their wants are, what their expectations are during their retired years. I personally advise people to try and put as close to 10% away as they can. You just never know what life is going to throw at you. I have a personal scenario with my mother. My father passed away when he was only 57, and my mom was diagnosed 6 years ago with dementia and has a whole host of health issues. So part of what brought me to where I am today is helping her through her financial situation and making sure that, and she did thankfully have the assets to cover her care, but she's been in an assisted living facility for 6 years now.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a great story. And I'm sorry that that's been happening. That's tough. But it reminds me that so many people that we're talking to in our audience are at this stage in life where they're dealing with both kids and their parents. And, you know, these are real life things that happen. And so imagine if you're being drawn into conflict and you're uncertain and you're really spread thin and you're worried about kids and your parents and you really can't wrap your head around what you need around the court system. So if you hit that wall in your relationship and you look like you're going to go your separate ways, then all this uncertainty arises, and it makes it very hard to focus on both your kids and your parents and on what you're learning about this process that you're now being told you're going to have to go through.
Right.
Whether it's your own choice or somebody else's choice, you kind of get pulled into a vacuum, and it creates a whole lot of anxiety. And so we were talking, and one of the reasons that you were referred to me is because of your empathy, because you've been through so much that you know what it feels like to have to address these dollar amounts around, you know, attorney's fees and litigation and everything that goes in divided households, and how am I going to provide, you know, how am I going to maintain stability? So can you... And James, I'll let you direct, as that's your job.
Okay.
I'm looking ahead into what do our listeners need to hear about, you know, the financial planning in that intersection of life and conflict that might carry us into.
Well, and I think that does take us into the next part of this, is the discussion about, okay, we had everything set up perfect. We were on target for all of our big dreams. Now all of a sudden we're divorcing. We're splitting assets. We're now having to run two households with the same amount of money coming in. So tell us some of the reasons why a divorcing couple needs to come see yourself or somebody in your role.
So attorneys, in my humble opinion, they're legal experts. They, in most cases, are not financial experts. So I think that when a couple comes to see me, or an individual that's going through a divorce comes to see me, the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to gather all of their financial information. And I am going to put that into an organized fashion so that I can analyze their data. And my goal is to help them come up with an equitable settlement, which may not be a 50-50 settlement, but it's going to be fair for both parties. And then they will be able to see what that looks like at the day of the divorce and 20 years into the future. And one of the reasons why I think it's important that they do that sooner rather than later in the process is that because people are feeling so uncertain, and by the time they've reached the point that they want to go through a divorce, there's usually some mistrust there. Mm-hmm. There's a good bit of animosity. It's very difficult for them to separate their emotions from what I call the business part of their divorce. And running your household and managing all of your households or your family's finances is like running a little mini business. And so when they see that and they see the need that their spouse may have for some kind of support or child support if that's appropriate, when they see it laid out for them, it takes a lot of that animosity out. The other thing that I strive to do is to make sure that they both can be financially whole. And so, again, it takes a lot of the animosity out of the equation and they feel better about it.
So if you think you can be whole, have your needs met, then chances are you may not need to resent or fear what the other person is doing.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, and I think you hit on a good point. There's a lot of, if there wasn't some mistrust and some unhappiness with the other individual, you're not getting divorced.
Right.
You know, I think the two biggest fears that we keep coming across, Deb, with divorces is, one, what's going to happen to the kids? And what's going to happen to my finances? You know, so you're now, when we start talking about finances, we're not talking about the extra yacht, the house in France. We're talking about paying the light bills,
right?
Making a car payment, making sure everybody has a roof over their head, that sort of thing. So we're talking about the brass tacks of day-to-day life. So that becomes very scary if I don't know if I'm going to be able to meet those now.
Right. And I also think that some people have unrealistic expectations. I've seen that more sitting in a family courtroom and watching what other people are going through. You know, you only have so much money in that pot, and it can only be stretched so far. So sometimes when people sit down and they provide you with what they think their budget is, it's not realistic,
right?
Because they're not living within their means.
Right.
And sometimes it's appropriate for someone in my role to be able to give them that reality check that says, hey, you know, I understand that this is important to you, but these are some other ways that you might look at that, or some other areas that you can cut out of your budget so that maybe you can have that one thing that is so important.
Well, and I think, you know, something you hit on the head a minute ago was the fact that you're going to organize all this financial stuff for them.
Right.
Because that's something the court's going to demand. I mean, you're both going to have to provide it's supposed to be full disclosure.
Right.
There's a lot of time involved in doing that.
There is. And I've had people bring me stuff basically in a shoebox and not know what to do with it. By the time they leave my office, they have their financial affidavits completed, which, again, is part of the process. I want to go back for a minute to the distrust. One of the things that I do is I go back through several years of their tax returns. I know I'm not a CPA, but I do know how to digest a tax return. So I can go through there and make sure that from a full disclosure perspective that everything has been provided to me so that everything is accounted for.
So if you see that something's not accounted for, then you can say time out.
Correct.
And whichever party needs to get assistance, if it's from an attorney or someone else, in ensuring that discovery and full disclosure happen as they should. Because, for example, if you have a public company CEO, there's going to be more disclosure, you know, more transparency there than possibly someone who owns properties in different states and has shell companies. So,
correct.
You know, there's all kinds of different scenarios. And, you know, not everybody's honest all the time until they're held accountable and they have some, you know, a more neutral, objective, reasonable party shining a light on, you know, so if we know what we have to work with, then we can set reasonable, you know, create a reasonable framework for this conversation.
Correct.
Well, and I think one of the things that enters into this is a lot of times the person who's filing for divorce might have been planning for this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They may have been, maybe not planning is maybe not the right word, but they might have been debating about it for a long time in their own mind. Well, the other party a lot of times will assume, well, maybe they've been hiding money or maybe, but going to a third party like yourself kind of, it takes some of those concerns away.
Correct.
I'm going to interject something that was, it's not funny. It was an interesting scenario where party decided to get divorced and they had plenty to work with to take care of their daughter and both parties were going to be fine. But somehow one of the parties got into her head that there were hidden boats and there was that there had to be millions of dollars worth of things that had been kept from her. And by the time it was all done with the litigation, they probably could have bought a really nice yacht. But the fact was the yacht didn't exist and the airplanes didn't exist.
Those would be easy things for me to check because they're all part of public records.
Right.
So you can go back and again, I know how to go back and look for those things. I'll tell you another amusing story. I sat in on a family court case one day, and the couple had a small family business, and it was a repair shop. And so as part of the way that they handled their money for 20-plus years, they were taking any checks that they received, and those were appropriately deposited into the bank account. But all cash was stuck in an envelope and brought home and stuck in their personal safe. So they were in the courtroom arguing about this slush fund that they had that had never been reported to the IRS.
Uh-oh.
And both attorneys were airing this in court, and the judge finally said, time out. Enough.
I think you need to go talk to the IRS first.
Maybe so. And you're listening to Pro Advocate Radio with Deb Beecham, founder of My Advocate Center, and Wendy Hayes, certified divorce financial planner. And we'll dive right back in, ladies. And as we're looking at this, you know, it is one of the big points of fear and contention, obviously, going in. And, you know, what are some of the reasons that people contact you outside of, you know, just coming from a point of fear? What would be some of the reasons that might not pop to mind immediately to where you can come in to play to, one, make this a smoother process, which automatically translates into spending less money on attorneys?
That is a big reason that people come to see me, is to come up with an amicable solution for the division of assets and debt. The other thing that I see quite a bit of is that people don't understand what their own financial situation is, and so they don't know how to go about it. And I'll go back to talking about 50-50 is mm-hmm. not always a split right down the middle. Some of the things that you have to consider are what cash needs they might have versus so your short, mid, and long-term goals are. One of the things that a lot of people don't know is that if you have a 401k plan, as an example, and one of the parties is going to need a chunk of cash, you can take money from a 401k plan. Say it's the husband that has the plan in his name, and the wife is going to receive a portion of that. She can take a one-time distribution at the time that that is transferred into her name. She will still have to pay taxes on it, but she won't be penalized. And a lot of people don't know that, but it's a way that sometimes you can help people to establish a new household because you can give them the cash to be able
That's
to do
really
that.
That's really good information. Thank you. And around separating retirement accounts and like stock options, for example, might be another way that you see assets divided, retirement assets divided. And that's something like for a later date for another segment, I'd like to have you back along with one of the attorneys that we've been discussing this with about quadros, qualified domestic relations orders. Is that something that you are brought into the discussion on?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's good. I think that's a big gray area that a lot of people don't understand, and that if you were to understand what the court can do and what the professionals can do to help protect you in right. your interests, so that you may not be looking for a distribution now, but maybe you are in 5 or 10 years.
Right.
So that's where the quadro comes in. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
So in a pension plan scenario, as an example, a couple might agree that he will receive X number of dollars per month when that pension starts being paid out, and she may receive another part of that.
Okay, great. So we're on Business Radio X. So, and we have the huge blessing of having a very diversified audience. We're reaching people not only in metro Atlanta and out into the suburbs and smaller towns in Georgia, but we're also streaming live around the country. So we're going to have a very large, you know, very diversified, broad audience. So what we're encouraging people to do is to send in questions, you know, use the form on My Advocate Center where it says report cases. And then from there, we can draw in the questions and concerns and the areas where people are getting caught in conflict, but they're not getting their financial questions answered at the right time. They're finding out things too late.
Right.
So if they can make informed decisions because they're connected with the right professionals, that's where connect, inform, empower comes from. So we're going to be encouraging a lot of Q&A going forward. So we'll have some questions come in that we'll follow up with you and do another segment so we can get into those questions. But some people can't fathom having stock options or, you know, a company pension, you know, or a, what's the healthcare account? What is that called?
FSA.
FSA. And what does FSA stand for?
It's a flexible spending account.
Okay. Those are fantastic if you can get them at your company. And as a small business owner, I'm looking at creating an FSA because I want people to have that padding, you know, because what does it do for you on your taxes when you put money into an FSA?
You can put money aside to be able, it's almost like a designated savings account for medical type expenses.
And it saves you on your taxes.
Correct.
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 And that's also something that comes into play in family conflict.
Right.
How do we spend that? Do we use it for the LASIK eye surgery?
Right. <You
know? laughs> Really, that's a real life issue that comes up. And it also falls into the divorce scenario because sometimes it's sitting there with a couple thousand dollars and who gets to spend it?
Right.
So those are just some examples. But we'll have questions coming in from people who have small businesses, who are self-employed, who are sales professionals. And then we have executives and big company owners actually coming to us saying, you know, my buddy at the country club told me he spent $1 million in fees, and that's money that could have gone into, you know, our kids' college funds. And, you know, do we have to go about it that way? What do you say?
I say no. I think that, again, the people that benefit the most from coming to see me are the people that want to have an amicable divorce. They want to be still friends at the end of the process, or at least still be able to be civil with one another.
Right. And they may care that the other parent has a decent home.
Right.
So when the children are, you know, whether it's 4-year-old children or 14-year-old kids, you know, in my case, I have, you know, middle school kids who go back and forth, and it's important that they have stability and, you know, they don't feel like they're deprived at either place. And I think really good people, good parents, you know, people who've set aside their emotions and the animosity can look at, you know, really it's in my kids' best interest.
Right.
for them to see that the other parent isn't struggling is any more than they need to be.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that we're striving to change is that dynamic of right now when you go into traditional divorce, it is really more like war. If the other party wins, that means I lose something.
Right.
And where we need to take this conversation is to turn it into, as what you said, more of a business transaction. I don't think people realize as they go into a divorce how much control they're surrendering to other people if they just turn it over to the lawyers, where if they come to somebody like yourself first, then they can protect those assets and really achieve a lot of the divorce before they ever walk into a courtroom by dividing the assets.
That's right. What they can do is they have their financial affidavit prepared and a proposed financial settlement. And what I typically advise them to do is have their attorneys review them. If they have questions, they come back. Sometimes once the attorneys get involved, that settlement changes somewhat. But it's usually pretty consistent with what they walked away from my office with.
That's great.
Well, Deb, one of the things that you've talked about that we continue to hear over and over again is a lot of these attorneys, not all, but a lot of them really do not want any communication between their clients during the divorce process. Well, all that does is build on that fear and distrust where if they can come to you up front, a big portion of this is really now we're talking about going to court to decide custody.
Right.
And visitation and those sort of things because you've taken the financial part of it out of it.
Well, some people will try to bring the financial back into play mm-hmm. around custody, and you know that's something we need to improve upon as we go. But it's interesting that you brought that up about, you know, we like to see transparency and open communication. In some cases, people need to be protected from each other, and we need kind of an objective, neutral third party to look and see where the troubling issues are if one party's not being honest, and that happens a lot.
It does.
You know, and sometimes people are so focused on their resentment that they're just not making good decisions, and they really don't necessarily want to destroy the other party, and they're not looking to give away all of their income and assets just to fuel that fight, but they kind of don't know any better. Nobody's throwing up the flag and saying, hey, time out. And I see you doing the, you know what, time out, let's kind of step one, step two, step three, and that helps slow them down emotionally a little bit. But I do have a couple who, you know, through referrals, they reached out and we wound up meeting with both parties. And when they started comparing notes, they found out that there was actually no need for them to be litigating around the custody of this one young child. And the assets were what they are, and the income is what it is. And they were able to reach a settlement on their own. And actually, I think they still do need to talk to you. So sure. We'll talk about that after the show. You know, it's not perfect. But when they realized that they needed to be communicating
right.
more on their own, it was just amazing. They said, you know, thank you. I think we just saved ourselves $15,000.
Right. And it's sad when you see people that have very little in assets that are spending everything they have to pay their legal fees when they could come see someone like me, have their agreement knocked out for them, and walk away and still be able to speak to each other, especially where children are involved.
Right.
It is so critical that you can still have a civil relationship.
Yeah, and something else that's important to our audience, no matter who they are or where they are, is it's the cost is not just a monetary cost.
No, it's not an emotional toll
and
that
it
takes on people.
A physical mm-hmm. cost. And speaking from experience, if you're running around worrying and meeting after meeting after meeting, trying to figure out things that don't make any sense, and you're basically inside of a pinball machine kind of getting knocked around, and you're not in control of that pinball machine, by the way. You can't see outside of the pinball machine, but if you're bouncing around like that, you don't realize what your children are witnessing. Mm-hmm. You don't realize how much time you're losing away from your children, and especially during a critical time when they need you available and focused on them. And, you know, from an employer standpoint, you know, I'm watching a lot of, you know, employers, HR professionals saying, you know, oh my goodness, the people that are going through divorce and getting caught up in litigation, when they come to work, they're not focused. They're not sleeping well. They're taking more sick time. They're visiting doctors. They're on more medication. Some of them are drinking more, unfortunately. You know, and they're just... It can take them out of play. Mm-hmm. And there's a cost to them professionally. There's a cost. If you're on commission and you're caught up in that, your commission's going to take a huge hit. And there's a cost to your employer. So it's a domino effect. It's not just what we typically think of. It's not just how much did I spend on the process. It's, you know, how much did I lose in productivity? How much time could I have spent doing charity work, volunteering at my kid's school, working with, you know, you may, if you see me online, you see that I'm a big fan of Must Ministries and Safe House in Atlanta, Children's Healthcare, the Shepherd Center. There are so many great, you know, organizations that need, actually they count on our support. And if we're caught up with all of these other things, we're not giving back to the community, you know, let alone our children the way we would otherwise. So right. When I think about financial and think of the cost, you know, I'm looking at kind of a holistic, you know, view. How's that for my soapbox?
I like it. I like it. Well, that was what I was going to ask Wendy, is how often is there actually a chest of gold hidden in the backyard that the other spouse doesn't know about?
I have not actually found one yet. What I have found is a lot of what you alluded to, that there's that distrust. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of people are not openly communicating during the marriage, they really don't understand what their entire financial picture is coming to the table for the divorce. So you start over from that point, and then you show them, this is what your wife is going to need, and this is what you're going to need. And it helps them to see it in black and white. They don't feel like, oh, well, you know, they walk away going, okay, that makes sense, even right. if I didn't want it to. And the other thing that I see an awful lot of are what they term as gray divorces, where people have gotten to that empty nest syndrome, or they've gotten to retirement, and they're realizing how much longer they could live, and they maybe don't want to do it with their current spouse. So, and a lot of those people do have those assets, but what I find is that one of or both of them have a preconceived idea of what that settlement should look like. And when I go through my analysis and show them, well, if we did it the way that you're proposing, this is what it looks like. You're basically getting 80% and she's getting 20. It's an eye-opening experience for them. They didn't come to the table thinking that they were being unfair. They thought they were being very fair. But when you show them what it really looks like, they see it in a different way.
That's perfect. I think a lot of times people think they're being fair, and they just don't have the perspective. They need to be educated on that. Two things that you said. One was preconceived. So I think during another segment, I'd like to get into the prenuptial agreement, antenuptial, and that's a whole conversation by itself, because I think after seeing hundreds of cases and talking to people all over the country, professionals, parents, grandparents, I think we need to open up that conversation and maybe look at it in a positive way instead of the negative connotation and fear-based that we see, you know, and see and hear a lot around that. So that's one thing that when you said preconceived, I thought, okay, we need to get into that.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the questions that we have actually gotten is prenups is, you know, I think there's a concept that it's one person really just trying to protect their assets from, you know, they were rich and they're going to not give the other person anything when they leave. But really, if you've got prenups put in, protect it, it really, if it dissolves on the other end, you really have saved a lot of work.
Right. So where a prenup is, well, let me back up for just a minute. There is marital property and there is separate property. Mm-hmm. So, and there are a lot of rules that govern how you look at the property and how it's used during the marriage can impact whether, even if it was separate property before the marriage, in some cases, if you utilize that property as a marital home, as an example, then it could be part of the marital estate. So there are a lot of rules that govern how that is treated. You really do need an attorney to look through a prenuptial agreement to make sure that it stands the true legal test of what a prenuptial is. But everybody is somewhat protected with marital and separate property. The biggest rule there is that you don't commingle. So in other words, if you receive an inheritance, you don't put that into your joint account. You keep that as separate property, and that protects it from becoming part of the marital estate.
Yeah, that's a great topic that we'll get into later, and we do have some good case studies. Really from all over Georgia and around the country that I think will help people if they understand, you know, pros and cons, but also what does it look like when this is done properly versus what can happen if we don't dot our I's and cross our T's. I can tell you what a bad prenup looks like. And I can tell you what it looks like when an attorney doesn't properly document and preserve what was discussed and done and signed prior to the marriage. And I can also show you what happens when you walk into court thinking that you're protected when you're not. And so it gets into, I think we'll have an entertaining dialogue.
Absolutely. <around that. laughs>
Well, and I think my biggest takeaway from this is by engaging someone like yourself, I keep control.
That's correct.
Where if I just go straight to the lawyers, it's kind of like declaring war.
Right.
And it doesn't need to be that way.
That's right.
There may be some scenarios where, you know, people are encouraged to set aside, challenge the prenup when maybe they were going to do fine.
Right.
With the prenup intact. So I think having someone like yourself to be able to have that conversation with, rather than diving straight into, we have to rip this up and start all over again, not necessarily, but we really appreciate all the insight and experience that you're bringing here. I know this is going to help a lot of people.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Well, and it's just the tip of the iceberg. So let people know how they can get a hold of you.
Okay. For additional information, absolutely, you can always contact go to my website, which is www.mitchellhayes.net. You can call me at 404-870-9040. And my email is wendy.hayes@mitchellhayes.net.
That's a very easy email address and website to remember. And are you on LinkedIn?
I am.
Okay. And is it?
It's, again, you can find me either under Mitchell Hayes or Wendy Hayes on LinkedIn.
Wonderful.
Well, Wendy, thank you so much. Wendy Hayes, thank you so much for joining us today. Deb, another great show. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, great to see you all.
Thank you.
This show is brought to you by My Advocate Center, the voice for families and family law advocates. Learn more at myadvocatecenter.com.